Katie, merhaba, hoş geldin yayınımıza.
Merhaba Asena, teşekkürler.
Wow, impressive. And I'm sure our listeners are going to be equally impressed with the information you're going to give us today. So I'd like to thank you again for graciously accepting our offer to make this interview. We're going to talk about a very interesting and intriguing topic, homeoprophylaxis. But before we dive in, why don't you tell us a bit about your journey? I mean, how you got into homeopathy and what led you to homeoprophylaxis in the end?
You bet. Yes. And thank you so much for inviting me to do this. My name is Kathy Lemon. I'm a homeopath. I live in the Dallas, Texas area in the United States. I began my homeopathic studies probably about 20 years ago, and my homeoprophylaxis, the non-toxic alternative to vaccines that is based in homeopathy. My second son was diagnosed with autism. And at the time, it was also the beginning of exploring and finding out how much information could be shared on the internet, and more talk was beginning to be said about a possible connection between vaccines and autism. And of course, my gut reaction to that was, no, absolutely not. They're all wrong. I would never do anything to hurt my children. I'm doing everything right. I'm following exactly what the doctors are saying, especially as far as these vaccines. I kept hearing this connection between vaccines and autism, and so I finally got to the point that I just said, you know what, I've got to make an intelligent choice about this. I've got to look into this. And so I began my own research, and I began, first of all, not just looking at what the anti-vax sites said, because their minds had already been made up. I went to places like the website for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. I went to the vaccine makers such as Merck and GlaxoSmithKline. I wanted to hear, we say in English, I wanted to hear from the people themselves, safe, how effective these vaccines were. And the more I was realizing that, wait a minute, they're not answering these questions. If vaccines are so important, why aren't announcements front and center right on their website? Because they're so good. And as I was looking into this, looking further into it, I started looking more into vaccines, finding out what exactly is in the vaccines. And it was very shocking to me to find out what really is being put in vaccines that we're just so freely injecting into our children. So I got to the point very quickly that there's need to be answered that aren't being answered. And so I realized, the thought finally hit me, that if disease prevention, surely vaccines are not the only choice. Surely that we should have an alternative. So this was the early days again of the computer, not of the computer itself, but of the internet. And so the search engines, Google was not such a big thing then, but I did a search using two words and alternatives. And that's when I first came across a homeopath in Australia by the name of Dr. Isaac Golden, and the research that he had been doing since the mid-1980s in his country of Australia. Homeoprophylaxis, what he had been finding, the fact being, axis is so effective. It's been in use for more than 200 years. And in his studies that he has been doing, he has been finding that not only is it non-toxic, but its effectiveness is right around 90%. Nothing will ever be 100% as far as disease prevention. This non-toxic approach that in study after study that Isaac Golden alone had been doing, with an efficacy of being right around 90%. World know about this. That was my thought. My goodness, this is something that everybody should know about, this homeoprophylaxis. And so, things being what they were, my children being as young as they were about 20 years ago, I didn't have time, I didn't have the resources to look further into it, but it was a few years ago that I was actually finally able to connect directly with Isaac Golden, and he helped me with my son a little bit. And my son, who's now 20, is doing remarkably well right now as a cashier at a local department store, and he's got plans for college and everything. But in any case, with that having taken place, I said to Isaac, I said, you've got to my prophylaxis part of my practice. And so he said, here, let's have you do this and this and this. And so it's become easily the biggest part of my practice, because this is what parents are wanting. this is what parents are looking for. This is what parents don't realize has been out there. As I said, homeoprophylaxis, 200 years. And so it got quickly to the point as well that I and a colleague of mine put together the first international conference, education of homeoprophylaxis, that actually took place here in Dallas, October of 2015. And Isaac Golden was our keynote speaker. So it's a passion of mine. I've been lecturing about it, as you would know, Asena. I've been lecturing about it not only in the United States, but internationally as well. I was in Amsterdam just this last January. This is something that I want to, people to have in their hands to be able to utilize.
Yeah, actually, I know that you've been to Europe before and lived here for some time, right?
Yes.
So I kind of see as a person in a unique position to give us a first-hand view of the differences between the healthcare systems and practices of these two continents. Do you see any differences in the mindset of the people, the healthcare officials, especially when it comes to the vaccine debate?
That's an interesting question to pursue, because what we have here in the United States, we have the CDC, and that organization, which influential organization, you know, the auspices of the CDC are very good. They're looking out for public health. Mm-hmm. Pharma. They also receive a lot of money, makers. And so money can be very influential. And please know this up front, that I do not consider myself to be anti-vax. Mm-hmm. Anti-misinformation about vaccines. What I want is for people to know both sides of the issue. And I was just listening this morning to a very here in the United States, who does a lot of work to promote vaccine rights and health choice rights. And with him speaking as well, he's talking about that money has beyond health. And that's the problem that we have here in the United States, because I present about homeoprophylaxis as much as I do, that I keep up on month to month. Every month the CDC has a certain site that wherein they report all the damages, all the injuries that were received to date from vaccines, from the inception of an act that happened here in the United States back in the mid-1980s again, that basically took all the liability vaccine manufacturers. Yet you look at the numbers of injuries and deaths that have occurred since vaccines, and they update this. It's astounding when you look at this. At the same time, we have here in the United States, in the state of California, we have, you may have even heard of it, there's a certain bill that they have passed in that state that requires, except for medical exemption, it requires every child to receive at least 15. It doesn't matter anything about that child. There's no philosophical exemptions. There's no exemptions at all. And this attorney that I mentioned, he is working hard to get this law changed, but it's got to be done in a very careful manner, because there's a lot of power, money, and influence, and they influence the lawmakers, and they influence the CDC. So that is the big predicament that we are in here in the United States.
Yes, it's really turning into a health freedom movement at this stage.
Yes, it really is. And when you have something that has to do with health, a parent, like I look at my initial reaction when my children were young, you know, I want to do everything that I can for the health of my children. Listen to what the doctors are telling them. Well, where did the doctors get their information from? Guess what? It's the vaccine makers. You know, it's really a nasty situation. That being said, what I have seen as I've been presenting over in Europe and associating with my European colleagues and friends over there, I am seeing a bit of an openness, a bit of a wanting to know. In the country of England, a little bit more of a difficulty that they're having, because, again, it's the influence of the vaccine makers and the money that they have over there within them. But also at the same time, with the presentations that I'm making, everywhere I go, whether it's in London, whether it's in Amsterdam, whether it's here in the United States, the reaction to the people who come to my presentations is the same. First of all, to consider that there was an alternative to vaccines. Second, when they learn about homeoprophylaxis, that it is time-honored, it's been in use for more than 200 years, it's been benefiting millions of people worldwide with no side effects. You know, that I have had countless parents, countless people come up to me after my presentations just saying, I had no idea. they've got these big smiles on their faces because they're so excited to learn about this.
That's the thing. We have no idea. I mean, as a family, we've been involved with homeopathic care and treatment for some time now to get my son's health issues resolved after his vaccine injury. But still, as people more or less involved with homeopathy, we haven't heard a thing about its prophylactic use either. That's interesting because definitely I see it's getting more traction by the day, especially since your international conference. I keep hearing more and more about HPVs, green vaccines, everybody's looking for, right? So the word is getting out, but why so late? Why did it take so long, do you think? I mean, is there something going on within the homeopathic community as well? I guess that's my real question in there.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the whole picture, and it's going to be difficult to describe this in just a few words here, but I'll do what I can because I want word out about this. I can speak specifically about the United States, why it has taken so long in this country. And that's because homeopathy, even though it was the medical approach of choice for the United States until the early 1900s, and it got kind of pushed aside and squished aside because people wanted to feel better now, you know, fix me now. And so that idea took hold. But we're to the point finally in the United States that people are saying, stuck on medications for the rest of my life. I want to be well. And so they're looking into more and more into natural alternatives. So homeopathy, because it is such a natural whole approach, is going through a rebirth. And with that being said, are questioning, are doubting, are not wanting anything to do with vaccines anymore, a lot of them. And so the idea of the green vaccine, the alternative, the non-toxic alternative to educate the immune system, that's gaining hold. It's gaining traction. The idea of preventing disease is a noble one. It's a good one. But at the same time, what I like to do in the presentations that I make too is to help people realize that there is a reason that diseases are out there. That it's never pleasant to get sick. You know, we have so many issues of, when you look at the statistics and everything, like chickenpox, the simple disease of chickenpox, you can track that naturally and it makes you more resistant to brain tumors. Thing with measles gives you great resistance to things like ovarian cancer. You know, it's just purpose. And in my opinion, diseases should not be per se. There are certain diseases, of course, like pertussis in an infant can be very, very dangerous. Also the meningitis disease, that's something that can kill within 24 hours of contraction. So there are certain diseases that it's good if you can prevent it. It would be good to avoid if you can. But by and large, I work to help people understand that there is a role, for diseases.
That was one of my questions for you, actually. I was going to ask you to explain for us homeopathy's view of disease, because you're not waging a war against these infectious diseases, right? You're not trying to eradicate any microorganisms from the face of the earth. The idea is to educate the immune system to live with these organisms, right?
We're working to educate the immune system, to educate the body. See, homeopathy is a whole body approach, looking at health as being not just physical, but also mental and emotional symptoms. They're all three. They've got to work together, and they've got to be taken into consideration as far as health and wellness. When we're looking at disease prevention, first of all, we need to appreciate, again, as I was saying, the fact that diseases are here for a purpose. And along with that, recognizing that the pathogens that are out there that cause disease, the pathogens, the bacterias and everything, they're living things. Want to survive. So when you take that into consideration, they're going to adapt. They're going to change. As far as eradicating disease, I remember hearing when polio was supposedly eradicated from the United States and everybody was cheering. My first thought, as young as I was at that time, was, you know, it didn't just disappear. It had to go somewhere. And so learning to work with the body, learning to work with the environment that we are all in, that is really the whole approach that I would face as far as wellness and wholeness. Fear of disease has come in large part because fear is a big seller. And basically we have not had to actually fear disease until we had vaccines. the seasonal flu, which is the biggest selling vaccine there. I looked at the numbers just the other day. Since the flu vaccine, there have been well over a billion flu vaccines sold. So it's a huge moneymaker product to sell. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to take a choice. I don't want to say that there's only one way. I want people to know, though, that there is a choice. I want people to feel good about the choices that they make. I want people to feel educated about the choices that they make. I want people to understand that vaccine makers look at their product as something to sell. At this time, last I checked, there was some 270 vaccines that they are working on right now to fast track into usage, meaning efficient testing on the vaccines. They just want to get them out and in use. And that, when you're looking at what a vaccine is, you're injecting foreign material directly into the body. Again, what's in the vaccines as they make them, including the formaldehyde, including aborted fetal tissue, including, there is indeed thimerosal, which is mercury-based, aluminum. There's all these very, very dangerous substances that are in the vaccine that are being injected into our body. And when you look at the numbers, the statistics for how many, again, as I was talking about earlier, how many deaths, how many injuries are happening and are being compensated for, things that we're just not told that we need to take into consideration. Whereas when we have homeoprophylaxis, a toxic approach, there's no side effects, nothing.
Has there ever been a death from homeoprophylaxis then, Kathy?
No, there never has. And interesting, along with that too, there has never been anthracnose. A homeopathic remedy has never been recalled. 1,000 of them too in use today. So those are things to keep in mind and to keep in when you're looking at things.
Yep. Shall we give some more information about these HB nozodes then? What is a nozode? What's it made of? How do you use it? Shall we go into those details?
Sure. So you will know first how a homeopathic remedy is made. Homeopathic remedies are made specifically from plant, animal, mineral sources. And what they do, one of the things, the founder of homeopathy was a medically trained doctor in Germany by the name of Samuel Hahnemann. And he found, when he was first into this, he found, first of all, cures like. In other words, what he was doing, he was translating a book from English into his native German, and he came across, it was a medical book, and he came across the idea of what's called cinchona bark, which is a bark from Peru that has been used to successfully treat malaria. And this book was explaining why these substances work, and it was saying that this works because it is an astringent to the stomach. And his thought was, that couldn't be it. There's got to be more to it than that. And so what he did was he found some of this bark. He ingested it himself. And interestingly, he started manifesting malaria. And he thought that was very curious, and he cleansed himself of the bark, and he got better. But it piqued his curiosity, and so for the rest of his life, he was studying plant, animal, studying them himself. He had groups of people, subjects, I guess, who wanted to try these, to prove these substances, and recording these. And he found in every case that the symptoms that a certain substance would cause a healthy person to produce are the similar symptoms he here in a sick person. That being said, what he also found was the power of dilution. In a simplified form, when you take one part of a substance, 99 parts of a liquid, usually water and a slight bit of alcohol in it for a preservative, when you combine them, or you pound them at a certain velocity for a certain number of times, then you take one part of that and 99 parts of the liquid again, and you continue doing this, combining it and succussing it, the more it was diluted became. It seems counterintuitive to think of it this way, but how Hahnemann described it was, you're removing the impurities. You're getting to the pure energies of the substance. You do that 1 in 99 times. You do that 12 times, and you're beyond what's known as Avogadro's number, which means that there's basically not a molecule of the original substance left. But you continue diluting it to the point that we use for homeoprophylaxis, we use it's called a 200C, C standing for centesimal, so 100. We use that potency that's been done 100 times, and we also use a 10M time, which means the M standing for 1,000, 10,000 times. We're working with pure energies. So when we look at this, and instead of showing that these diluted substances work gently but very powerfully well on not just people, not just grown people, but also infants, also animals as well. It's not a placebo effect. There's so much more to it than that. So that's the basics behind how a homeopathic remedy is made. When you're talking about nozodes prophylaxis, what those are is the substance that's actually produced by the disease itself. You know, pus from a chicken pox or something from a rash or some sort of a substance that has been produced by a body in result body having this disease. That is taken and it goes through that same dilution and succussion series to the point, again, there's not a molecule of the substance of it, remaining in it. Again, there's absolutely no chance when you're doing the homeopathic nozodes for homeoprophylaxis, no chance at all of contracting the disease that you are introducing to the body.
That's one thing we see with the conventional vaccines, right? Because people can get the very disease they are being vaccinated against from the vaccine itself. That also creates the problem known as viral or bacterial shedding. And that's another huge topic to be discussed maybe in a separate program. But are there any other differences between the HP nozodes and the conventional vaccines?
Well, plenty. You know, first of all, you've got it's so diluted. It's absolutely non-toxic. There's no other chemicals that are added to the homeoprophylactic nozodes. Also, you don't have to worry about, I guess along with that, you don't have to worry about anything added to it. We do not combine remedies. It's just one single disease at a time. There are some homeopathic practitioners who do choose to combine them. I prefer, from the studies that I have done as well, I have grown to prefer just doing one at a time. Just keep things simple. When you're looking at nature, the body can only actively work against one disease at a time to begin with. You know, the body's never afflicted by only one disease at a time, but the body can only actively work against one disease at a time. So that's why I prefer to do homeoprophylaxis. Additionally, homeoprophylaxis is something that is administered orally, route of infection. It works with the body. Okay, there's not many diseases you can get because of, you know, a shot in your arm. And that's how vaccines are given. Homeoprophylaxis is given orally, again, contracting an infection, you know, through the mucous membranes of the mouth, the ears, the eyes, the nose. That's how diseases are normally contracted. So because homeoprophylaxis is done orally, it's in and of itself that in that manner, it's working with the body. With vaccines, because we're looking at the approach. The idea of what immunity really is.
That's a topic I'm really interested in, Kathy. Could you perhaps explain to us the differences between the immune reaction the body gives to a vaccine versus an HP nozode? What happens in the body when you get stuff injected versus when you orally ingest them? Maybe give us the immunological perspective here.
You bet. Well, let me preface this by saying that I am not an immunologist, so I'm not going to know all the terms and all the exactness. I do what I can. But what I can tell you is a vaccine is designed to stimulate the body to produce antibodies. Antibodies, you know, are the things inside of our bodies that will eat away the disease antigens that are in the body. Learned, I have grown through my studies and everything to appreciate immunity as being a whole lot more than simply the production of antibodies. A vaccine stimulates because a vaccine is made from a weakened or a dead virus body sees that's injected into the body. So that's what the body reacts to. But because it's a weakened or a dead virus, it's not a complete reaction that can happen. Not entered into the body the way that weakened or dead virus would normally be introduced to the body if it had normally been infected with that. This being said, when we look at homeoprophylaxis, we have the nozode, which is made from the disease, the substance produced by a disease. Again, it's diluted to the point of that substance, which are the strong things of that substance, really, when you look at an energetic of considering it all. You're introducing the energies of the disease to the body. The body recognizes it and responds as a whole to the substance that you have just introduced to it. Okay, it's a whole body response, not just a particular specific skin-stimulated response. Because the whole body responds to it, the whole body reacts in the whole way. It's important to keep in mind that the idea of titers, we can talk about that really quickly. Titers, in a nutshell, fight again, because I'm not an immunologist, but titers would be specific antibody. Okay. And we don't need to get into all that at this point, but it's at the same time, antibodies are one of the last things that a body will produce in response to a disease pathogen. There have been studies that I've seen from several medical journals that show, and I'll just take pertussis for example, that the presence of the pertussis antibody of immunity, they've known that for about 20 years at least. At the same time, there was a very significant test that was done when there was a great big study that was done in the nation of Cuba against this disease called leptospirosis, which is a very, very dangerous flu-like disease that is endemic to Cuba and is worse during the hurricane season, so from about October through December, chose homeoprophylactically to treat about 2.3 million people in three provinces. And the homeoprophylactic testing there proved significantly effective. It was about 84% phenomenal, way better than the vaccine that they were trying to use. And, of course, the cost was a lot less, too, but we can talk about that later as well. But in any case, it was so effective that one of the doctors who was involved in this test said this further. So he took and did a test with some mice. And he took one group of mice and exposed them directly to the leptospirosis virus. And when he first treated them homeoprophylactically, them all to leptospirosis, 1% of them survived, them produced any antibodies. With that being said, it's really nice, the whole body immune response. It is so much more than simply antibodies.
Katie, I lost you there. The connection is not really good. You know, from time to time, I'm losing you. So that experiment with the mice, the scientists treated them homeoprophylactically, and then what happened?
8 mice survived.
They survived, and without antibodies, you said?
None of them produced antibodies. None of them produced antibodies at all.
That's really interesting. 80% survival rate with no titers.
It's fascinating because there's a clear statement right there. Logical response is a lot more than simply the presence of antibodies.
And in fact, this has been known for a long, long time, hasn't it? This might come as a shocker to a lot of people or the medical community at large, but as we always say, getting a vaccine in itself does in no way mean getting immunized against the disease. Actually, it's quite the opposite, because your body is trying to fight off these pathogens introduced through the needle directly into the bloodstream, like one hand tied behind its back, and its guard is thus down, and it's getting a hit every time a different injection is given. And you're giving 6 or 8 vaccines in one visit to these infants' already immature immune system, and no wonder these kids are having horrific adverse reactions. And yeah, this is just another hard evidence, I guess, to the fallacy of the modern vaccine theory.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, we ran 2 of your articles in Turkish on our website, along with your colleague Silas. And we find that people are interested in this very safe and effective and health building alternative to vaccination. But who is HB for, Katie? Do we all need to avoid diseases, or are there any special circumstances which might prompt people to consider immunization? Because surely we can go and use HB for every imaginable communicable infectious disease out there, right?
It's basically yes. Yes, the short answer to that is yes.
But how about these mostly benign diseases like measles or chickenpox? Does everybody need protection against these childhood diseases?
Well, let me respond to that just simply by saying again, as I said earlier, there is a purpose for diseases. Measles alone, measles itself is a disease. If you have access to fresh, good, whole water, then chances are if you contract measles, you're going to be okay. But as far as which diseases are you asking, which diseases should we want HP4?
Yeah, maybe we can say that. Yeah.
Okay. What we've put together for here in the United States, and it's spreading here. We have, because because vaccination is being so especially pressed for our children, put together an entire protocol for children, childhood homeoprophylaxis. For this package, we have picked out 8 diseases.
And which diseases are they, those 8 you're talking about?
Diseases we have chosen would be the pertussis, pneumonia, polio, Aphilis B, influenza, the meningitis, the tetanus, mumps, and measles. They're specifically in the program. Beyond that, of course, I always tell parents I have access to nosodes for other diseases if you are interested in those.
I haven't heard you say hepatitis B there, but they are also pushing that one on the day of birth there, right?
That, yes, as well as a vitamin K shot, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, we're closely following the U.S. vaccine schedule in Turkey down to the vitamin K shot given at birth, unlike most European countries. And the resemblance of our schedules is so high. That's why I was interested in that 8 disease protocol of yours.
Well, the thing, when you look at hepatitis B, of course, you would probably know about this, that is a sexually transmitted disease that is often transmitted by, and I don't know of very many newborns who are active or are drug users, you know. So they're really, they try and say that, well, you know what, it can be passed from the mother to the child during the birth process, which is true, but instead of blanketly vaccinating every baby that's born for hepatitis B, check of the mother beforehand. Positive for hep B, there's no reason to vaccinate the newborn baby. The vitamin K shot, there's a lot of controversy around that too, because, well, yeah, we don't need to get into all the controversies here right now. It's just what we've done with homeoprophylaxis for childhood, HP, we've whittled it down to these specific 8 diseases because these are ones that are commonly worried about, and especially, again, because of the whooping cough, the pertussis, and the meningitis, we wanted to make sure. We don't have put together boxed protocols for adult HP. We don't have the same either for HP for travel, which is another option, as well as and I help many people with both those as well. And if you think about it, it's pretty obvious because there's a lot of options, especially for travel. Where are you going? You know, how long are you going to be staying? You know, those different things. Simply treating adults with homeoprophylaxis, what adults are going to want. You know, we have homeoprophylaxis available for the flu. Toxic approach for that.
Oh, the flu. Well, let me ask a question about the flu then, because, you know, that's an interesting one. The virus mutates like every year.
Absolutely.
So it's hard to get a hold on to that naughty virus of ours, and they're failing miserably, the conventional vaccines.
Yes, they are.
So how does the HP work then? I mean, do we need to take a different HP nosode every year like the conventional vaccines, or what happens there with the flu?
And that's a wonderful question to ask. When you look at how homeopathy works, again, it's like cures like, but the same cures the same. It's like cures like. When you look at how a vaccine is made, again, as you've noted, the virus mutates. It's one of the most freely mutating viruses around, and that's why the flu vaccines have to be made new every year. When you look at the actual flu itself, look at the symptoms that happen as a result. That's what homeoprophylaxis works on, because you have basically, you know, you have aches and pains, you have a fever, you have, you know, feeling of exhaustion, feeling of just general flu feelings that are the same year after year after year. When that's the case, the same nosode can work every year.
Mm-hmm.
We can make a new flu nosode every year, and a lot of homeopaths choose to do that, and that's absolutely fine. But what I've found, I have a certain flu nosode that I think I've had for about 8 years now, that I finally ran out of this last year, and it's been working fine. So that's one of the wonderful advantages that we have with homeoprophylaxis, that we can use when the symptom picture is the same or at least similar. The same nosode can be used, and that's one thing that really, really significantly helps prophylaxis.
Yeah, because I'm thinking with the bacterial diseases as well. I mean, take for example the meningococcal bacteria. There are 13 different types of this bacterium, but in different parts of the world, different types of this bacterium are prevalent and cause disease. That's why we have all these different meningitis vaccines. Man A for Africa, Man B for the UK, Man C, Man B and Man C for the States, etc. The type and number of the meningitis vaccines are getting higher and higher. We might need 9 more, I guess. Why not? But with the homeopathic nosodes then, does the same principle of similar cures, similar or similar treats, similar apply here with the bacterial diseases as well for different strains of the bacteria?
And that's a great question. And I'll say it's possible that the same nosode that could work in the United States could also work in the UK, could also work in the Netherlands, could also work in Turkey, if the symptoms are the same. With that in mind, however, it's also good to realize that it only takes about 2 weeks, a homeoprophylactic nosode, once the symptoms of a disease are known and are seen to be similar again and again, Turkey or wherever you are. You take a substance from this illness and you can make it into a homeoprophylactic nosode again in as little as 2 weeks. It doesn't take much to get something specific happening.
Okay. Well, what stage to start HP then? Since homeopathy looks differently at immunity, the disease process takes into account the mind, the body, and the spirit and everything, and we know that a baby's immune system is busy developing till the age of 3 with the help of the passive immunity it gets from the mother via nursing and breastfeeding. Is it okay for a baby to get HP treatment under that age, do you think?
Yes, and that's a great question to ask because, you know, as we've been talking about, the CDC recommends certain vaccines right at birth in that when the baby is a newborn, if the baby is nursing from its mother, can be done for that baby for at least the first month. You know, just nurse that baby, get those passive antibodies into the baby to encourage immunity. Because as you've said, the immune system doesn't actively work for at least the first 6 months to a year, you know, sometimes even longer. And so that's helping. It's encouraging the baby's immune system to develop. And so what I tell parents, you know, at least give the baby a month to bond with the mother. Encourage homeoprophylaxis before 1 month of age. And some parents, you know, they want to wait 2 or 3 years, and that's absolutely fine too. It's going to depend on the situation that you're in with your child, with your children. You know, if the baby's going to be home with you, be putting the baby in a preschool or even a daycare.
Yeah, that's another concern because many babies are being bottle fed these days, and they're being put into the daycare centers when they're only 3 months old. And most mothers, these young mothers are themselves vaccinated. You know, I'm not sure if they're passing on any immunity to their kids. We have all these modern day problems, and that's why I'm asking this question, because it's all different now, the situation with the infectious diseases. And so my other question was, is it safe to use during pregnancy? Because I see CDC's latest advertisements on the internet. Well, they're advertising all new moms-to-be. Here, these are the vaccines before getting pregnant. These are to be taken during pregnancy. And here we have a selection to be gotten after giving birth. It's incredible, really. But how about HP? Can moms utilize HP during pregnancy?
Sure. But let me make it clear that this is something that, In my opinion, it's beyond reason. to be vaccinating a pregnant woman. You know, that they really push here in the United States a vaccination for a pregnant woman for the the Tdap vaccine, the tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. They push that for pregnant women as well as the flu vaccine. When you look at the package inserts for those specific vaccines, you will see on the package inserts that these have never been tested on pregnant women. They are not recommended for pregnant women. When you look at the flu vaccine alone, the multi-dose flu vaccine still has an extraordinary amount of mercury in them. And this is why miscarriage rates are astoundingly high who have received, especially the flu vaccine. Being said, I just want that to be understood. Prophylaxis. Homeoprophylaxis is non-toxic. Homeoprophylaxis, when you do homeoprophylaxis, it should always be under the direction, under the supervision of a trained homeopath, such as myself, or someone who has received the training. Pregnancy, it's absolutely 100% non-toxic. It is absolutely safe, and it can be done while nursing. And this being said, if you want to have HP for your child, for your baby, that you are nursing, it's generally most effective if the HP is given directly to the infant and not through the breast milk. Possibility that it could be passed along, but in order for the HP to have the most effect on the baby, it would be encouraged to do that than nursing the baby, just so it could respond to the baby's body directly.
Okay. Kathy, I'm losing you again, so I'm going to go over things once more for the listeners. So during pregnancy, it's safe to utilize HP, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And to get the full effect, we want the babies taking the nozos directly, not via nursing.
Correct, correct. Give it directly to the baby. And that's easily done when you put the HP nozo into some water and let it absorb into the water and give the baby maybe a dropper full of the water.
Okay. And by the way, this concept of giving boosters for immunity, because, you know, with conventional vaccines, they need to repeat vaccinating like every 5 to 10 years because they say the immunity wanes over time. And that's why in the U.S. the students need to get a third MMR for university entrance. And plus, they offer the Tdap vaccine for every family member from all ages, irrespective of their immunity or vaccination status for cocooning the baby, despite the fact that this vaccine's ineffectiveness in protection is notorious. And every single year, little outbreaks of pertussis occur with every age group in the U.S., despite getting this vaccine at least 5 or 6 times. And, of course, we wonder if the same thing happens with homeoprophylaxis. How long does the protection last with HP? Do we need booster doses like the conventional vaccines?
Right, right. And that's a very good question to ask as well. The idea of boosters, and just because history helps us understand what we have today. When vaccines were first introduced, it was introduced with a one shot and you're done. One shot and you're good for the whole rest of your life. Well, they quickly found that that was not the case. You're going to need this vaccine again. And so they introduced this idea of boosters for vaccines because vaccines don't work directly with the body the way the body works. How it is, and now that they're looking at having the flu vaccine recommended for babies up to twice in their first year, which is astounding. But in any case, when you're talking about homeoprophylaxis, because it's a whole system, because it's a system that works with the whole body, the idea of a booster, there's several approaches to this. And one is, as far as the childhood homeoprophylaxis, you go through the whole protocol and with this, system, with this approach of the 8 nozos that we have for it, it's a whole system. We've got 2 different potencies and it takes about 32 months to get through the whole system with all 8. Of the nozodes, which is fine. And once you're through the whole protocol, you can probably wait maybe about 10 years. There are several families whom I've met who want to, as soon as they're through the 32-month program, boom, they want to do it all over again. That's fine. It's a non-toxic approach. It's not going to hurt anybody. But as long as you're still, again, doing it in consultation, under the supervision of a trained homeopath or other healthcare professional who's been trained with homeoprophylaxis, you should be fine. Additionally, because HP works with the whole body in a whole way, if there is some sort of a traumatic event, like a serious illness, or if there's an accident or an injury, or, you know, heaven forbid, a death in the family or something like that, need for a booster at that time or a redosing of it because it's affecting the whole body. Recently had a mom, they had just barely started an HP program, and then her son got very, very sick. Get what he got sick with, but she just, you know, consultation with her, she just decided to start all over again from the very beginning. It's just, it's a whole method. It works with the body. And sometimes additionally, you are, an incident of a particular disease that is very, very strong, like the flu. If there happens to be the case of a flu that's very, very strong in your community, you'll probably want to dose it more often, and you may need to dose it even a couple weeks after you're done. It just depends on the situation.
Okay, I see. One other question, Kathy. There are a lot of vaccine injured kids. You know, they may not be on the spectrum, but everybody gets injured by these vaccines to a degree. It's impossible not to with all these chemicals. But can the vaccine injured kids use HP? Because some of them cannot follow the routine vaccination program anyhow because they're so heavily damaged. Their immune system is malfunctioning as a result of all the insults with vaccines. Can they still find protection with HP, do you think?
Right, right. When we're looking at vaccine-injured children, again, that is something that is going to need to be done on a case-by-case basis as well. Generally, because there is injury, what we'll want to do is to work to get that child whole. And there are wonderful homeopathic methodologies to utilize as far as heal from vaccine injury. And I've studied into that. And there's many, again, Dr. Golden has studied into homeopathic treatment for vaccine injury. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at a child, if the child is very, very severely injured, the first thing that should be done is looking at the child, the vaccine injury, and looking to see what can be done. Because, again, if you remember, I said earlier, the body can only actively work against one disease at a time. The most important thing will be to help that child become as well as he or she can become. And then at that point, want to look more seriously into the HP. You know, you won't want to vaccinate at all. Foremost is to help that child be well and become well.
Well, U.S. is leading the world in this aspect as well, you know, in treating these injuries. And I know that homeopathy has a wide range of treatment protocols for this type of injury, but can you briefly go over these for us? Because the question we get most is, can we detox all the impurities we get from vaccines? And there is still confusion about the answer to that question in Turkey. So can you offer an answer for us, perhaps? Or maybe talk about the CEES protocol, specifically designed for treating vaccine injury.
Okay. Well, just briefly, and I haven't actually done a whole lot with it yet. I've studied a lot into it for several methods, like the CEES method, which was begun by Dr. Tina Smits right from the Netherlands as well. But I've studied it under Isaac Golden. I've studied the homeopathic treatments under a couple of German homeopaths that I know as well. What we're looking at with vaccination, we're looking at a whole different occurrence. We've got certain consistencies that are happening, for example, with infants, the diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus shot. Injuries commonly begin manifesting themselves as things like rashes. When we look at MMR, and again, please know that I'm not saying every case. These are just general things that commonly happen with the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. That is commonly seen with digestive issues, commonly manifested with digestive issues. And often that's one that will cause a child to turn in on his or herself, you know, kind of disappear into an autism type diagnosis. There are many, many other injuries that can happen as a result of vaccines that the special training homeopathically, there's remarkable progress that can be made as far as detoxing. We've got to realize been introduced to the body through this, these vaccines, and got to recognize how the body has reacted, the impurities that have been forced into the body in this way. And we've got to recognize what the body is doing now to compensate for these substances that are now in the body, and work with it at that point, like what Dr. Andrew Wakefield was finding with his MMR, certain issues that happened in the gut causing severe gastrointestinal issues. And the consistent thing for those was that these children all had had the MMR vaccine. It's recognizing these. It's helping the body cleanse itself of these. I've recently done a hair analysis for my son. And interestingly, the hair analysis shows he still today has a very high amount of aluminum. Aluminum can be introduced a number of ways, but there's a lot of aluminum used in vaccines as an adjuvant. So that's kind of touching a bit on a lot there as far as homeopathic and the treatment of vaccines.
How about metals like mercury or aluminium? Is it possible to get rid of them using homeopathy?
What we use approaches like what I've just gotten for Joshua finding this aluminum in him. I've ordered the made from aluminum. It's introducing him to an energetic form of aluminum based in the human body. And so what will probably happen with my son when I introduce this to him, the body will see this and realize this, act energetically, and realize that needs to get rid of it. And so that will happen. There are CEASE approach. One of the things with the CEASE approach and these other approaches as well, there are potentized things that are often introduced to the body homeopathically. Help, again, it's introducing an energetic form of this vaccine. They will see this potentized and introduced and say, oh, yeah, here it is, and will respond in such a way that it can cleanse itself of the. These approaches are actually showing a very, very high rate of efficacy as well. You know, unfortunately, again, it's not going to be every case, but because it is actually treating and helping a very high number, it also is something very worthy of consideration.
Yeah, okay. Let's go with countries that are utilizing HB then, shall we? As far as I can tell, we have Cuba, Brazil, the South American countries, the US, of course. Which are the countries?
Prophylaxis is, I've recently written an article for a homeopathic magazine about homeoprophylactic use throughout the world. It's used in many, many countries. I found in the Netherlands, there's a number of homeopaths there that are using it, as well as in Germany, the country where I lived. There's a number of homeopaths there who use it. In the UK, there's there as well. What I found most interesting when I was putting this article together is the nation of India. Preface this by saying this. There's a province in the nation of India called Andhra Pradesh where Japanese encephalitis, major issue, you know, killing many, many children every year. And back in 1999, they decided to use a homeoprophylactic approach. They treated 20 million children. And interestingly, it was within 3 years his encephalitis has become non-existent in that province right there. It was absolutely tremendously significant. And that got the attention of the government of India. And one thing led to another. And that's not the only thing that contributed to it, but that was absolutely majorly significant. But the nation of India actually has official recognition.
Wow, it is backed by the government and the state. Perfect. And I heard that Japan is going strong with HB nowadays, right?
Absolutely. I've been in contact with, a Japanese homeopath named Torako Yui. That brings up the next homeoprophylactic conference that I'm working on, which will be taking place in Europe. She will be one of our speakers. Yeah, it's amazing what's going on as far as the spread of homeoprophylaxis. And I should say as well, HP is also used, of course, in Isaac Golden's nation of Australia.
Right. And you told us that since the 1980s, he's been doing this. And Obviously, I'm thinking he must have been keeping some kind of statistics on this, right? Are you aware of any statistics comparing, let's say, the rate of autism or other kind of developmental disorders between groups of children who are utilizing HPV versus the conventional vaccines by Isaac Golden?
I personally don't know of these statistics. I know that one of Isaac Golden's advanced degrees, he's done advanced studies into statistics. So he knows how to look at numbers. He knows how to analyze numbers. He's not afraid to question numbers. He's not afraid to be questioned about numbers. So I really trust the data that he's able to present. And I know he's working hard. At our conference that was in Dallas this last October, he shared a lot of charts and graphs that showed numbers and statistics as far as historical recognition of HP, historically well it seems to work. And there's a certain chart that I use in my presentations where, and he's got it in his book, where he was looking at homeoprophylaxis, looking at how successful it was being, and he was being the statistician that he is. He said, okay, this is well and good, but I want to know how homeoprophylaxis might be, I guess, probably as you were alluding to with Asena, things like things that, for which there aren't any vaccines for, things like asthma, things like allergies, things like behavioral issues and ear. How are those being treated homeoprophylactically? How are they in comparison with those who are treated? To me, he actually did a whole study on this, and he made four different groups of people. One treated only with homeoprophylaxis, one treated only with vaccination, one treated, he calls this general, and that's just kids, good, whole, organic foods, and you know, just living a good, whole, well lifestyle, and those who have done nothing at all. So those four groups, the HP, vaccination, organic, and nothing. And so he had those four groups, and he had these different, there's no vaccinations for, again, like allergies, like asthma, like behavioral issues and the like. And he put together a study for these, and his initial thoughts as he put this together was, there's going to be no question here. The healthiest group is going to be this organic group, the good whole health foods and everything. But interestingly enough, after he put this together, in nearly every case, the healthiest scoring group was the group treated with homeoprophylaxis.
Wow.
Really surprised him. And he says, of course, it doesn't prove anything. It just means that further study is warranted. But to me, looking at it, I'm just thinking, amazing. Testament to homeopathy and how it works with the whole body.
One question there. The group who ate and lived organically and the ones who didn't do anything of the sort, did they also get vaccinated, the conventional vaccines?
He's very careful. He wanted the HP only to be the group that only had HP. No vaccines, nothing but HP. Ones with vaccines, that's all that they got. The other two groups, the organic group and nothing group, most positive, he's not here, I can't ask him specifically, but I'm almost positive he made sure that they also, the organic group, had gotten no vaccines as well, and the nothing group.
Really interesting. Not just the immune system, but it looks like HP is training and strengthening the whole body, and the susceptibility to all other chronic conditions is thus rendered obsolete, more or less. Perfect. Well, Katie, let's get to the practical side of things now. We've learned from you that in Germany, people are using HP. In the UK, this is available as well. How about Turkey then? Because people are interested. People, most of all, are interested in homeopathy. But we need to get a hold on HP in particular, because as you might know, there has been a recent coup d'etat attempt by the Minister of Health in Turkey to forgo all parental and civil rights and mandate vaccination for all children. Luckily, the law didn't pass, but we know that they're going to try again. That's why parents and medical community in Turkey need to know about this now. Because it's a huge disservice to our children, because scores of them are getting injured every day, perhaps for the rest of their lives. As for the families, though, since we have nobody offering HP treatment in Turkey yet, can they work with an HP practitioner living abroad, or do they need a local one to guide them through the process? How does this work?
Okay, yes. We are to the point, I'll just start here in the United States. What we are working for is we are working to get official recognition of homeoprophylaxis. Mm-hmm. And to this end, we are working to get our own studies together that are happening here in the United States. And we're working to train not just homeopaths, but other healthcare professionals as well, homeoprophylaxis and how to keep track of it, to help build a firm and solid foundation for it. So as far as getting HP into Turkey, what we really want is for it to be substantiated, for it to be understood how well and effective it is. And so to this end, I've spoken, you helped me get in contact with the one homeopath in Turkey. And he shared with me that right now in your country, homeopathic remedies as a whole, he was saying that they have to go to Greece, to places like that outside the country to actually get the remedies. And so I've been thinking about this since you invited me to do this podcast. I've been thinking about the best way to get HP into Turkey. Another colleague of mine has been over times and has spoken as well. What I would want ideally would be to get those homeopaths right in Turkey in homeoprophylaxis, how to use it, how to supervise it, how to reach the people that you already know, Asena, who want this non-toxic alternative. I will be happy to, with the organization that is quickly coming together over here, I will be happy to get it over there to a few families, but I want things to be able to be on the table as well so that people can say, oh, you're using homeoprophylaxis, please tell me more about this. Get curiosity up so that people can see it, so people can recognize that it works, that it's being effective. Whole health, that the cost.
Oh, Katie, I'm sorry, but I lost you again.
No.
Right at the most important part, in fact, the cost. Tell me about the cost, please.
The cost of homeoprophylaxis is minimal. Scenes. Just looking at Cuba alone with the leptospirosis intervention, the cost of vaccines was more than $3 million. That being said, the cost for homeoprophylaxis for that 2.3 million people was $200,000.
Wow.
Significantly less.
And they're doing this anyway, right? Because it's a tropical disease hitting seasonally, so they need to vaccinate every year. If you think of it that way, I mean, the monetary difference is huge, really.
Absolutely huge. Yeah, when you look at this, another colleague of mine who lives in the Netherlands too, his name is Harry van der Zee. He does a lot of work for several nations in Africa. You've heard of him. Just to say that he can treat an entire village of a bottle of water.
Ridiculous. Well, everything about homeoprophylaxis seems to be quite impressive. I guess we really need to find a way to get this into the hands of people. But again, on the practical side of things, Katie, do you think we as the families need to have a good grasp of homeopathy first, or can anybody follow the protocol with the guidance of an HP practitioner?
What I like is for people to have an understanding of what they're working with when they're working with homeoprophylaxis, because it's energetic medicine, because it's different. The common allopathic medicine, you don't take three of this a day for 5 days, it's nothing at all like that. So I like them to have a good fundamental understanding. And this can happen with the presentations that I do. I work to establish, a bit of that foundation to help with the preliminary understanding of it all. Being said, for getting it into Turkey, for getting it into the hands of the people of Turkey, homeopaths, if we can get other healthcare professionals who would be interested in utilizing this and get them.
So just to be more specific, are we talking about other healthcare professionals like chiropractors, naturopaths, osteopaths and the like? Because we have them all here. And also, can nurses and midwives be put into the equation here?
Ideally, any of them.
Any of them.
We have acupuncturists, naturopaths, midwives, anybody who has medical training, any kind of healthcare training, get it into their hands, help them learn about it, help them learn, how to utilize it, get it into the hands of the people.
And is there a certification process involved here, Katie? They're going to become a certified HP practitioner, perhaps?
There is. You can get certification. And Isaac Golden has a great online course that you can reach from my website, actually, that they can access to. But there's I actually know of other training programs like Toraco Yui in Japan has one. My colleagues in Germany have one as well. So there's not one single approach. Just right now, and we're working on that because we don't want people to be thinking that I can only know homeoprophylaxis if I've studied under this and, you know, learn homeoprophylaxis and how to administer it. Isaac Golden's program by my colleagues in Germany by studying theirs or, you know, many others. But what we want, and this is what I've got in the oven, I guess, with my one website, It's going to be an umbrella for all these homeopaths, wherever they are, to be able to kind of link arms one with another, to not tell each other how to do homeoprophylaxis, but to be able to say, here, I've gotten certification in homeoprophylaxis, and all we'll need is a copy of it or whatever so that we can have, you know, over here, this medical professional over there, and all these people can see, okay, here's where I can go to access homeoprophylaxis.
By the way, something else came to my mind. The thing is, in Turkey, only medical doctors can officially practice homeopathy. Would this create a problem for the type of healthcare professionals to utilize HP, or is it a separate issue, do you think?
Well, and see, that's one thing that I don't know about because I don't know what the exact laws in every country are. I know in the nation of India, where there is official recognition of homeoprophylaxis, you need to be a medical doctor to practice homeopathy there as well. And they've just passed in the country of Belgium, they've recently passed a law that's to being this as well. But I don't know because homeoprophylaxis, guess I better not venture there too because I don't know what your country, what Turkey would say exactly as far as training homeoprophylaxis with something as far as a vaccine alternative, how they would want to look at that. What I want is for people to recognize, for health authorities to recognize that vaccination is not the only means. Again, it's been around for more than 200 years. It's been benefiting millions of people around the world. You know, and in all these studies, there's even randomized placebo-controlled studies that have been done that are still consistently showing a good efficacy of right around 90%.
Yeah, it's incredible. Because in Turkey, the biggest scare is meningitis and polio because of the Syrian refugee buildup in the country. Oh, and measles, of course. The poor measles scare crowd can never be put to rest, I'm afraid. People are going out of their minds about this infection and trying to avoid it like the plague. Oh, God forbid, measles. But with meningitis, I hear the effectiveness rate is like 95%. Without any side effects. Now, that's the kind of protection we would want for our kids. We need a tool that is safe to begin with and offer more good than harm.
I was just going to say, as far as meningitis, these studies about meningitis, these significant ones, they came out in 1998, 1999, right around that time period, same time as the Japanese encephalitis one began. But again, that's when they were showing this astoundingly amazing effectiveness rate of homeoprophylaxis. Interesting note on the side of that is that for meningitis was not introduced to the public until 2005. It has been around a long time, has been proving to be very, very effective for a very long time.
Oh, we totally forgot about its history, how it came to be. It goes back to the times of Hahnemann, right? In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he's the one who started using it for scarlet fever, correct? Maybe we can take a quick ride back in time and recite that history for our listeners. Katie, what do you think?
you mean give you a short history of how homeoprophylaxis came to be?
Yes, please.
It's interesting that this happened right about the same time that came across the idea of using cowpox to make a vaccine for smallpox. That was 1796. It was around 1799 that Dr. Samuel Hahnemann was asked to come to a nearby village. There was beginning an epidemic of sorts. And he found there was a young girl he found who was taking the homeopathic preparation of belladonna for a certain skin infection that she had. And it was interesting because this young girl did not the scarlet fever. And what made that particularly interesting to Hahnemann was the fact that this young girl was also the same young girl who was always one of the first that would come into her village. And so he thought that was very, very interesting. And so a couple of her siblings had come down with the scarlet fever, but a couple had not. The young girl who had been taking belladonna, she wasn't having anything. So Hahnemann took the belladonna and treated her siblings who had not come down with scarlet fever, didn't come down with it. And so he thought that was very interesting and intriguing. So he went ahead and treated the entire village. And he, with that, he stopped the epidemic. And that was so significant that spread quickly. You know, and I've seen a list of several doctors from the same time period who had heard of the success of belladonna, homeopathically prepared belladonna against scarlet fever. And they all tried it with groups of their own patients, and they all had amazing success with it. And it got to the point several years later that the King of Prussia, from his chief medical advisor, Hufeland was his name, one of the best known medical people of the time, created the use of belladonna as a preventative against scarlet fever. And the interesting side note with the King of Prussia, he had a son treated in 1798 with Jenner's vaccine for the smallpox. His son became gravely ill and was so sick for at least a week. Unsurvived, but I look at this, you know, the comparative impression of the son with the vaccine, and look at how he was all over this idea of homeoprophylaxis for smallpox, excuse me, for scarlet fever. Some sort of a sense of gratitude in it, in the king for having found this non-toxic way. And so it was since Hahnemann's time with the scarlet fever that it expanded, it then went to cholera, it went to several other diseases, and again, it spread just throughout the world, this non-toxic approach to disease prevention. And it's used, again, as I've said, that's out there.
Yeah, yeah. But I wonder why they didn't come up with the HP for smallpox then. Scarlet fever, yes, back then it was a fatal disease, and it's important to get scarlet fever and cholera out of the picture with HP. But why didn't the same thing happen with smallpox? Because real historical records and accounts of the time give a terrible picture of Jenner's vaccine causing huge epidemics itself, killing scores of people, disfiguring thousands of people. Why nobody thought of giving HP for smallpox, I wonder? If it only makes sense, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm sure they've got HP for smallpox. It happened to be at Hahnemann's time, focus at the time that he came across the idea of using Grimidi prophylactically. It happened for Hahnemann's time to be scarlet fever. Jenner got the smallpox.
And Hahnemann got the scarlet fever. Okay, I see. Okay, so just to recap, he used the remedy which he was using to treat scarlet fever prophylactically to prevent disease, and it worked. But some classically trained homeopaths still find this fact a little hard to digest, as far as I can tell. What do you think?
Within the homeopathic community, there are that don't want to buy into homeoprophylaxis. They don't want to buy into using homeopathy prophylactically. I just, I've been confronted by several homeopaths who think that I'm clueless for, you know, that I don't have an understanding of homeopathy and everything. The arguments that they've used against me clearly show that what they need is a bit of education. It really is. You know, and that's fine. I'm not with what I do, but to know that they have a choice.
Mm-hmm. And I personally find it a bit dogmatic to reject the idea, especially when you see the evidence that it is working and there's a demand from people who want to protect their kids. The hardline Hahnemannians may not themselves want to buy into this, but it was Hahnemann who had discovered this prophylactic use, and he himself utilized it on a grand scale. And if he were living today, who knows, perhaps he would be utilizing it for the infections that we're talking about today. And maybe the Indian, Cuban, or Brazilian homeopaths are Hahnemannian enough, and they are venturing into this uncharted, blasphemous territory. And the government of India is also in on this plot. I mean, I urge people to be realistic here. Because today the scenery of health is very different from, say, 100 years ago. Kids' lives are being destroyed with unsafe conventional vaccines all around the world. And I guess we need to raise our heads from our textbooks and take a long, hard look at the consequences of our unwillingness to take action. We need to let go of our personal beliefs and set aside our philosophical differences here and start exploring and learning new tricks, except that it is not new in any sense, of course. Or we can just sit and watch more and more families' lives being turned upside down, and only then perhaps we can offer our help to treat these injuries. I mean, for me, this is a no-brainer. Prevention is key, and we need to facilitate this real, viable, preventative method.
One of the big arguments that homeopaths, certain homeopaths, like to bring up is they will like to say that homeopathy should only be used as a prophylactic in the case of an epidemic. That they like to say. Well, and then if that's the case, how do you define an epidemic? That I would present to them, do a certain number of people need to die before you're going to do anything about it? Do a certain number of accidents need to happen, a certain number of fatalities happen before you'll say that that's a dangerous intersection? Or can't you do something beforehand?
Yet it doesn't have to be an epidemic situation. Perhaps people's own personal situation is calling for it. That was what I meant when I asked you if there were any special circumstances that might prompt people to consider HP. Say you're a young woman thinking about having a child, but you weren't exposed to chickenpox or rubella when you were a kid, so you're not immune. Plus, you're working at a school or a daycare center. Now you really need to sit down and think. These two childhood diseases, if contracted during pregnancy, might pose a real danger to the fetus. We know that. On the other hand, even if 100% of the kids you're working with are vaccinated against these diseases, it doesn't mean that they're going to be protected. Some will not even respond to the vaccination, and they will succumb to the natural infection. And some will get the infection from the vaccine itself. And they will shed it for weeks. Now, you don't have any control over the situation. These kids are live virus factories loaded with different man-made viruses and bacteria. And as we know, they're infecting other vaccinated and non-vaccinated people. Now, would you go and get the shots from your doctor knowing they're coming with a laundry list of side effects? Or do you quit the job because you don't want to, you know, take any chances? Or do you perhaps start on a homeoprophylactic therapy, knowing full well that it won't be a threat to your pregnancy or health in any way, and they stand a good chance of protecting you, much more so than the conventional ones? People need to be able to make these decisions for themselves. Or let's say someone in your family is a cancer patient and, you know, they're having immunosuppressive treatments, whatever. Now, you need to be really vigilant to not let anybody, any recently vaccinated people, have contact with them. Any type of infection could be life-threatening for them, even the flu. Now what you going to do? Again, let's say you're one of those young moms who herself was vaccinated in her childhood, and the protection, in air quotes, she got from the vaccines, if any, is long gone. She's not herself totally vulnerable to those infections. Plus, even if she's breastfeeding, she's not transferring much maternal protection to the newborn. They are both vulnerable here. And who is to blame for this dilemma here? This is a man-made problem. The culprit is the mass vaccination programs selling false hope to people that they're going to be protected. But now, the epidemiology of the diseases have totally changed. You don't know what you will get, when, from whom, and how hard it's going to be for you. Oh, I don't know. It is complicated. Another scenario. Perhaps you're one of those working moms who needs to pass on to formula feeding early on, no, and leave her kid to a daycare center, or the kid might be going to school with hundreds of other vaccinated and shedding kids. You might want to consider HP instead of letting the doctors inject dozens of those toxic vaccines into your kid, damaging your child in every way instead of building health. Or it could be a total different scenario. You're a perfectly healthy mom. You're on no medication. You gave birth naturally. You have family to guide and advise you on how to take care of the baby. You yourself had most of these diseases back in the day. So you're immune for life. And you know you're offering the best protection for your baby for as long as you breastfeed. You know that vaccines cannot take effect in the presence of the maternal antibodies, and no vaccine will work under the age one for this reason. You have access to trusted healthcare professionals, you know, your medical doctor, your homeopath, your chiropractor, whatever. And you know when it's time to ask for help in case anything serious comes up. Now you can say no. No vaccines and no HB for my kid. Thank you very much. Well, good for you. This is surely the ideal situation. Mama bear with no fear. Perfect. Or again, perhaps you're one of those homeschooling parents, whom I deeply respect, by the way, and your child doesn't have to spend his days trapped in an artificially created confined space with hundreds of other kids. Instead, he lives in a stress-free home environment, and he goes out to play every day, gets plenty of sunshine, moves freely, thus his bodily systems are not stagnated. You know, well, the whole disease risk evaluation thing has changed now. Your kid is in a much better position to handle those childhood diseases if he is exposed anyway. But yeah, we know not everybody is living in ideal conditions, and you cannot expect a high level of confidence from every parent. They might be scared to death, you know, by their doctors that their baby surely would die, you know, if he contracts any of these diseases. And they don't know the first thing about providing the necessary care if disease hits. So they might feel trapped, honestly. They are to make, you know, a choice between the risk of these deadly diseases and equally risky toxic vaccines. We might be able to say to them, no, you're not helpless here. You have a safe choice, you know, best of the two worlds.
Yes, yes. And when I look at this, I look at the where we are today. As when we look at chronic diseases, when we look at numbers of people coming down with chronic diseases, and we just look, have we become a healthier society with all these vaccines that we have been introducing? You know, I recently saw how in the United States we have more, let's see, related deaths. You know, this has to do with women anytime during pregnancy and anytime up to a year after the end of the pregnancy, a pregnancy-related death. The numbers of those are higher than they've been in at least 25 years. There's no reason for this. Well, I think there probably is. Certain, and as far as the infant mortality rates, it's astounding how high, with how healthy a country, the United States, there are 33 nations that have a lower infant mortality rate than the United States, which has, incidentally, the highest vaccination rate of children in the world, of children under a year. Now, there's no connection that they'll want to tell us, but I think it warrants study. It warrants study.
All they need to do is stop Hep B vaccination at birth for 1 year and see if there is any change in infant mortality rates. Shouldn't be that hard to do. Select just two pilot areas. You don't have to go, you know, on national scale. Yet when it comes to these studies comparing the health status of the vaccinated versus unvaccinated, they will do anything to not do them. Parents need to think about the reason for that.
And they like to say it's not ethical, but I have a question about ethics when it comes to things like this. But in any case, too, I don't know if you've heard the term the precautionary principle. That is something that people are finally realizing once again. You know, let's not just have this refer to our environment. And let's look at health, because with the precautionary principle, we talk about assessing risk. We talk about looking at options. We talk about age-old medical term, first, do no harm. If there is any question about the safety of anything, that anything else that we can do that might not cause that this approach does. They're trying to write it off saying, well, it's just a cost of progress. Well, I don't want my child to die. Progress, no, it doesn't need to happen. It does not. And when you have an approach such as homeoprophylaxis, wherein there, it's non-toxic, there have been no fatal reactions in more than 200 years. That is significant. That is worthy of consideration. That is something that healthcare authorities need to recognize, for which I'm going to stand up for. And that's something for which I have put these international conferences together. HP in people's hands. I want people to know, to be educated about. This is why I travel around, sharing with people this message. I want them to know.
Yeah, we're grateful to you for that. And can you please tell us the name of the organization you have?
The name of our conference in 2015 was Homeoprophylaxis, a Worldwide Choice for Disease Prevention. Or the website for that conference is hpworldwidechoice.com. I've further abbreviated that down to being hpc.org. And that is the developing website right now that's going to be, like I was referring to, the umbrella organization. We're not going to be one that's going to, again, tell everybody what to do. We just want homeoprophylaxis to be out there, to be recognized. Well, Isaac Golden's training, I have a link for it on my website, my private practice website, which is healthyhealingarts.com. His training, it's about a 13-week training, but it's very, very efficient. It covers everything. It's all in English, but it's very, very complete. I'm working with, again, my homeopath colleagues doing this for almost 40 years. I'm working with them to help hopefully get theirs translated into languages other than German, which German's a great language. I speak it as well, but it's, we're working to get it in the hands of other people, and I'll be talking more with Dr. Yui in Japan as far as getting her training available for people as well.
Great. Well, Katie, thank you so much for being with us today. You've given us lots of information, and I'm sure people are going to find it really interesting. It was a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Asena. I sure appreciate this.
Soluciono mis problemas, no soy parte del conflicto. Soy y siento, existo. Ya mi mente no está envuelta en laberinto ni acertijo. Soy y siento, no estoy ni pienso en el tiempo que me ha tomado llegar. Soy y siento, no soy invento ni mentiras que disfrazan la verdad. Soy como el agua que corre el río. Quiero esta vida llegar al mar. Soy como el aire llenando el vacío. Y siento, existo, soluciono mis problemas, no soy parte del conflicto. Soy y siento, existo, ya mi mente no está envuelta en laberinto ni acertijo. Soy y siento, no estoy ni pienso en el tiempo que me ha tomado llegar. Soy y siento, no soy invento ni mentiras que disfrazan la verdad.
Soy y siento, humano con defectos, tomando las decisiones con errores y aciertos. Desierto y bosque tropical, buscando el equilibrio, tengo un sueño y soy real. Camino en espiral, directo a mi destino, esquivando trampas y sorteando pena y lío. A veces un huracán me atraviesa en el camino y yo me aferro a mis ideas para no perderme en el vacío.
Respira mi vida por mí.